Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to talk about some videos that I've been watching. One I haven't watched too much of, but these are awesome videos that cover how to hack into an Active Directory domain, how to set up a lab environment, and also another one that sort of talks about how hackers get in or how pen testers get in. And this one's interesting because it's not really about the vulnerabilities. It's more about kind of default or misconfigured devices. So I thought that was kind of interesting. One is from SANS, and then two are from Black Hills Information Security. So they're really good. But before we do that, I want to briefly talk about the CISSP. This is one of the reasons why we haven't been doing a lot of podcast episodes, because I've been busy trying to study for that, take care of some other stuff as well, work projects, that kind of thing. But one thing that I sort of want to talk about when it comes to the CISSP, I've got some really good videos that I'm using to kind of get me ready for the test. And the lady who's doing them, she has really good explanations on what the CISSP is looking for. And again, this is more of a managerial sort of test, in that you're not the implementer. You're not the one who's going to put in the firewall. You're the one who's going to come up with reasons why you have to have a firewall, reasons why you are going to have things like security awareness training. You know, you're going to give reasons why you should have certain, you know, controls in place. And the CISSP is more focused on the managerial side, creating that security program. And so policies, procedures, kind of general views of what kind of technology and controls we got to have in place.
Compliance.
Those are all kind of part of the CISSP. When we talk about pen testing, the CISSP doesn't care about pen testing, other than you may, at that manager level, say once a year we should have a pen test done. You know, or you may do the pen test for compliance reasons. There may be certain rules, regulations, laws that you have to follow, and those require you to have a yearly pen test. So those are things that you have to think about when you're looking at the CISSP. And I think even for myself, when I started out in IT and started looking at security, I didn't understand where the CISSP fit in terms of overall, big picture type of thing. And a lot of people that I would talk to didn't understand it either. And they thought that it was goofy because some of the explanations given made no sense. And it really wasn't something that we could point to and say, this is how you implement something. Because that's where we were all at. We were all kind of implementing things, trying to hack into things or what have you. And that's not what the CISSP is about. It's about that bigger picture, the overall kind of idea behind a security program. Again, policies, procedures. And then one of the things that they're primarily focused on is things that you're going to do to reduce overall risk. Because that's one of the main focuses you have in security, is to reduce overall risk. And when we talk about risk, we're talking about business risk. So that's kind of where I think the CISSP kind of, you know, it's hard for some people to understand that, because when they're new to security, that idea of reducing risk and having a security program and documentation, that's not what you're thinking about. Because that wasn't what I was thinking about when I started.
No, I think most people are looking at the technical part of it and how to implement it, not at the reasons why you need to implement it. How do you keep in compliance for those security things that you have, and how to make sure the business is covered so it's not at risk.
Yeah, and one little issue that I'm running into with the CISSP is how I study for this thing. And also, when you think about certifications in general, a lot of the security ones require you to have CPEs, continuing credits, so that you can keep your existing certification. Now, the reason they want you to do this is because they want to know that you're learning new things. They don't want you to be somebody who takes a test and then never bothers to look at what's going on in security, never bothers to take a look at what's going on in IT. You need to keep up to date with what's happening, especially on the security side, because that changes all the time. The attackers are learning new things. You should be as well. And to keep up with my CPE credits, I tend to watch the SANS webcasts. They're free. You can look at the on-demand ones. They'll give you a certificate at the end of that. You have to go just download that. Now, you do have to sign up for an account on the SANS website, but that's free. And then you can watch all of the webcasts you want. And the first video I want to talk about is a SANS lab. And this one is really awesome because it's called NTLM Relaying 101, How Internal Penetration or Pen Testers Compromise Domains. So the things that I've been struggling with in terms of how to hack into a Windows domain environment and become domain admin, that's what this person's going to be talking about. And what's really cool is that he walks you step-by-step through this process. And not only does he do that, but they actually have a whole entire lab you can download. So all the VMs and everything, you can download them. And these are going to be running in VirtualBox. And so you're going to need about 80 gigs of free drive space. You're going to want something with 32 gigs of RAM because you're running multiple boxes. And then there is a, I think there is a Kali Linux box in there as well. I haven't used those VMs because at the moment I don't have a box to run them on. But what's cool about that is that if you're starting out and you don't want to have to mess with anything and you want something prepackaged, this might be it. You just have to have a system that has enough resources to be able to run all of that. But again, he walks you through the process of using different tools and how to hack into the things and how to do things like pass the hash, which is where you get the password hash of a user account, and it's the hashed version of somebody's password. And then you can use that to log into different systems, which is really cool. But he's kind of giving you explanations of how it all works, why it works, what to look for, why he chose to use VirtualBox over something like VMware, because you could do this in VMware Workstation. I'm using the VMware Server stuff, you know, in our VMware environment. And there are some interesting things he talks about in terms of broadcast traffic or maybe multicast traffic. And it may be why some of my labs don't work inside of VMware because of those issues. But that's something I have to take a look at. But yeah, he does a lot of really good explanations of how these things work. You know, what is NTLM auth, using broadcast traffic, Active Directory certificate services, shadow credentials, a lot of cool stuff in there. And then he's also using tools like Responder, Petit Potam, which I've never seen before. So that's something I want to take a look at. And this is where I find that security is kind of interesting, is because, you know, once you learn how to configure something, it kind of sort of stays the same, right? You set up a Windows server, it's a Windows server. And then the next one you do is going to be very similar. But when you get into security, there's all these different tools out there. There's always things changing. There's always new attacks. Things get patched. Things get configured in different ways. And so you have to go back and relearn them. It's also what makes security a big challenge, because you have to keep up with all this stuff. You have to learn all this stuff. You have to keep going. And so, again, a lot of my free time is sucked up by learning about things like Petit Potam. I got to go download that. I got to go install that. I got to make a lab for that. I got to test it. I got to learn more about it. And then I'm going to have to create documentation for that, so that when I'm actually doing an actual pen test, I might be able to use that following my documentation. Let's talk about some of the other videos by Black Hills Information Security. So the last one is from SANS, and the instructor that did that, again, he's really, really good. So I recommend watching that. I'll put a link in the show notes to that one. And then we also have a couple of videos from Black Hills Information Security. Let's see here. The first one I want to talk about is you got hacked. Let's see. What do they call this here? It's the top reasons you got hacked in 2022. Now, the two people who are giving the presentation, they're actually people who work for Black Hills Information Security. They actually do pen tests. And Black Hills does a lot of pen tests every year. So they end up with a lot of data that tells them some interesting things about how attackers can get in, because they're pen testing things and they're the attacker trying to get in. So one of the things that I used to think about when I was first getting into security are the vulnerabilities. And the vulnerabilities are the ways in which an attacker could potentially get in, because that's a weakness within the environment, whether that's in, you know, Server 2019, Linux, Windows 10, whatever it might be. That vulnerability is a weakness that could be exploited by an attacker to get into your system. And what's interesting here is that as pen testers, pen testing, large organizations, they're not really using them. And they're not using them because One, AV has gotten to the point where it's catching a lot of that stuff, right? Because you might have a tool or software that you're using to take advantage of the vulnerability. And as soon as that hits the system, AV kicks in and says, oh, you can't do that. I'm gonna stop that. So whether you have AV, like let's say Windows Defender or something more fancy that would be more along the lines of endpoint detection and response or endpoint security, where it's kind of a combination of things, that's going to catch a lot of that. And so if you're going to use, and one of the examples I use, and I don't know why I didn't think of this before, but when I started out in security, I found out about Kali Linux, and then we have things on there like, I can't think of it now, but there are tools in there, security frameworks that are used to automate the process of hacking into things. And so when we try to use those, they didn't work because AV would catch it all. And then when you got rid of AV, then they would work.
Like the Harvester and things like that?
No, that's a little bit different. Harvester's something different.
So I have a question, though. I mean, what is the difference really between a pen tester and a hacker? And besides the fact that the pen tester is bound by a set of rules and they have to do, you know, the little contract thing. But when they try to infiltrate a network, do they have like the no bounds like the hacker does? Or do they have to just abide by a set of parameters and what they can do is limited?
So the tool I was thinking of is Metasploit. Metasploit has a bunch of stuff in there based on vulnerabilities. And then you use Metasploit to take advantage of those vulnerabilities. And those actually do work. However, a lot of AV is going to catch that. And then some of those exploits, they don't work as well as you would like them to. They're kind of iffy. So you kind of have to be aware of those kind of things. But a lot of that stuff is caught by AV or advanced endpoint protection. So it's kind of like pointless to try to use that because it just never works, or most of the time, AV is going to catch that. Now, when you're a pen tester, you have a contract that specifies what you can and can't do. And then you also have to be careful because you don't want to be the one who takes down the network or takes down the server. So you kind of have to be careful about that. And then, you might be in situations where it's okay for you to take something offline, but as a pen tester, you want to be very careful about that because you could be taking down mission critical systems, and it may be difficult for the client to rebuild all of that if they have to.
But now, the hacker don't care about that. So how accurate is the pen test?
Well, what you're looking for in a pen test is, can they get in? That's it. Is there a vulnerability? Is there a weakness? Is there a way for somebody to get in? That's all you care about. And if you can show the customer that you can get in, then that's it. It's game over. And then you have to sort of explain why or how you got in so that they can understand what their weaknesses are. And they can begin to create a process to remediate that, to fix all of that. And that's where the value of the pen test comes into play. It's not just the fact that you got in, but that you can explain that to people. And then they can begin to fix all of that. And you help them understand the kinds of things you're going to need to do in order to make it harder for the attacker to get in. But again, this video is really, really good because the guy walks through the process, gives you the VMs, and then he explains, this is why we're doing this. This is how this works. This is what's really going on behind the scenes. And then he talks about, you know, in a pen test, you can do these things ahead of time to capture this and that and the other thing, which super helpful. And again, if you're starting out, this is how you learn this stuff. You listen to these people, you do the labs. And you need to get an explanation of some of this stuff because if you're in IT and you turn to somebody who's sitting next to you and you say, hey, how does this work? There's a good chance they're not going to know either, because when it comes to the protocols like LLMNR, how does that work? What's going on there? Responder. They probably never even heard of the tool Responder. Petit Potam, I'm willing to bet that you might find, server admins that have been in the industry for 20 years, never heard of that. Because it may be a new tool. It may be a new way of looking at things that they've never even taken into consideration. So that's why I think videos like this are super helpful. And you have to go out there and look for these kind of things because it's the only way you're going to learn this stuff. You know, traditional IT people, they know a lot, they can do a lot, but they're only focused on making sure that router works or that firewall is implemented or, you know, server 2019 is deployed properly. Outside of that, they may have no idea how this other stuff works. And that's where the security people come into play. Now, in the BHIS video, the most important thing that I got out of this one is that the vulnerabilities, if you're not going to use them, then how are you going to get in? And that's where in the previous video, they talk about how to hack into things and the tools like PotipoTam and other ones, Responder. Those are taking advantage of default configurations. So if you're going to set up a Windows domain environment with Server 2019, by default, LLMNR is turned on. That's a protocol. That's vulnerable to things. You can use Responder to catch some of that. There are some other protocols like SMB, and there's a thing called SMB signing, which is turned off by default.
So maybe sometimes the vulnerability is not the issue, it's the configuration that it may be?
Exactly.
Okay.
So what they talked about from the two pen testers from Black Hills Information Security, they talk about the fact that the vulnerabilities are kind of hard to use because of AV, and then they go into a lot of the default stuff you're going to see in a large enterprise environment. You know, you're going to have devices with default passwords. You're going to have Active Directory configured with default settings. So again, you have things like LLMNR. You have SMB with no SMB signing turned on. There's a lot of other protocols that are there because Active Directory needs them, but by default, they're not secure. And so you can take advantage of them. And a lot of times, that's what they're doing. Another thing that they also talk about, and this is kind of their number one thing, is stealing people's credentials. So it's relatively straightforward to get somebody's username, but then you have to get a password to log in. And so one of the things that they point out, and this is talked about a lot within security, is that weak passwords are a big deal. And that's a lot of the reasons why hackers get in is because you have a weak password. And one of the things they pointed out is that season and year plus an exclamation point is oftentimes the password. So you might have winter 2022 exclamation point, winter 2022 dollar sign, something along those lines. And because they know that that's something people use a lot, they have tools that can help you guess those kinds of passwords. You do password spraying, cracking hashes. When you get a hash, you can crack that. Because they're using weak passwords, you can kind of guess what the password is using certain tools, and you now have a username and a password that lets you log in to all these different systems within an enterprise environment. And those are the reasons why they're getting in. You know, it's not about the vulnerability, which was something that I kind of, you know, knew before, but until somebody else explains it to you, it's kind of hard to say, oh yeah, I get it now that the vulnerability, while it's there, it's important to patch that, and you should be. Don't forget about your patch management process, but the attackers are getting in other ways. You know, your weak password is one, and the fact that you have default configurations on your system is another one. So that's where your hardening guides come into play. And so at some point, we'll want to take a look at the benchmarks from the Center for Internet Security. Those are hardening guides, and we can use those to figure out, okay, how do I harden Active Directory? How do I harden Windows 10? Now, I don't know if the Center for Internet Security has one for Active Directory, but I do know they have one for Windows 10. So those are some things that you can use to make sure it's or make it harder for a pen tester or a hacker to get in, because you're going to follow those steps to turn off things like LLMNR, to turn on SMB signing so that those things can't be used.
So for CSSP, CISSP. Do you have any videos that you would recommend to people so it would help them with a test?
We'll talk about that in a future video or episode.
Okay.
Because I think that there are some interesting things in there that are going to be helpful for people. And yes, there are some videos. They're not free, but there are some really good videos that people can watch for that. Now, the last video I want to talk about is also from BHIS. And this one is how to build a home lab for InfoSec. And again, this is one of the pen testers from Black Hills. He's really good at what he does. And boy, he walks through a lot of stuff. We already have a lab environment, but it's interesting to see how other people put their labs together. And he goes through lots of things. I mean, he's talking about hardware, firewalls. He gives you options for firewalls, switching, VLANs, Wi-Fi, storage, processors. He kind of evaluates processors and their speed and how they calculate things. So, you know, you can understand, okay, if I get this processor, I can do these things quicker or whatever the case may be. Talks about building a PC because maybe you need to build one for your lab environment. He talks about cloud, and he offers up a solution that's relatively inexpensive because cloud's going to cost you something. It's not completely free. It's going to cost you something. So he offers up a cheaper alternative to cloud, which I'd never heard of before. So these are kinds of things. Again, when I go back to how to hack into things and learning how those things are done, when you're starting out building a lab, boy, it's hard to figure out what to get and why would you get something. And then, as he points out in his video, it can get really expensive if you try to look at, you know, some of the enterprise stuff. And we've talked about that before. We don't have certain enterprise solutions because they're just, I mean, you know, the cheap one is 30 grand. Well, I can't afford that. So you kind of have to build a lab within your own budget. And he talks briefly about that kind of thing. And, you know, we chose to go with our VMware environment, and I bought a relatively expensive server, costs around, you know, $3,000 or $4,000. But that means both of us can use it. I can build out some really big labs, and I don't have to think about, oh, I'm going to run out of space, I'm going to have issues with this or that, because we eventually got it to the point where it has enough resources for us to be able to do that. Now, in the beginning, I didn't size it properly. So what ended up happening is it didn't have enough RAM. It didn't have enough drive space. That was the big issue. It was running out of drive space. So those are some things you want to take into consideration when you're building out your environment, is that you have enough resources to be able to do what you want to do. And it, as I pointed out in one of the videos, the first one from Sands, you're going to be using VirtualBox, but you need 80 gigs of drive space and 32 gigs of RAM and a pretty decent processor to be able to run all of these VMs at the same time. Now, while some of this is expensive, it's a whole lot cheaper than it used to be, because before virtualization, you had to buy actual hardware. And so if you wanted a Windows 2019 server, you got to go buy a box to run that on. And then if you want a couple of Windows 10 machines, you got to buy a box to go run those on. Now you can just do it all in virtualization.
It reminds me of the days we used to have to tote the devices to the library because, you know, it wasn't virtual and we had our boxes and our server and, you know, our switches.
Yeah, and there actually is some benefit to having physical hardware. I would recommend looking at some of that, because if you're looking at the implementation side of security, you want to know what it takes to put together VLANs. You want to know what it takes to put together a server of some kind.
And the cabling, you know, the where to plug things in, that's really important. And that, to me, that helped us a lot when we had the devices. So,
yeah, it does. And so there's a lot that goes into security and learning this stuff. I'm sort of on the managerial side of things, where we're looking at, not necessarily managerial, but sort of the auditing side of things, where I'm looking at policies, procedures, security programs, how those are implemented, vulnerabilities, weaknesses, doing risk assessments, gap analysis, those kinds of things. And that's where the CISSP comes into play. But there's also that other side of security where you are going to deploy the firewall, you are going to set up logging.
You have to understand how it works.
Exactly. You need to understand how it works. And that's where some of the lab stuff comes into play. And then these videos are super helpful because, again, sometimes I don't know the answer to some of these things, or the tool is new. It's different. I've never seen it before. So that's where this stuff comes into play. But yeah, any other things you want to add?
No. I'm really curious about it. You know, the next videos too for the studying, because I know how tough it's been for you to study for this test. And it's not like a usual standard test, but that will be another episode.
But that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at support@section9.us. If you haven't subscribed to our show, please do so. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.